Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. Sudan's economic reform attracts donors.
Sudan can move forward toward the HIPC decision point, which is the first formal step in the HIPC process. It also means that Sudan's on this path to integrating with the international financial community.
And some Sudanese political parties have mixed reactions about the Juba peace negotiations.
If Al-Hilu wants to force a secular state on the Sudanese people, our people are ready as well to defend Islam through force.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Ugandan authorities say at least 9 of its nationals who were driving taxis and trucks have been killed in 2 separate ambushes in South Sudan this week. For VOA News, Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
5 Ugandan taxi drivers were killed on Sunday while their passengers were forced to strip, then were abandoned. The 4 truck drivers were slain yesterday on the Koboko-Juba Road through Yei in South Sudan's Lanya County. Byron Chinene is the chairperson of the Uganda South Sudan Truck Drivers Association.
This incident started on Sunday when they killed the 5 people, the taxi operators from Koboko and Arua, towards the South Sudan at Yei. So these people were just ambushed on the way. Yesterday, Monday, when the army came to open the road, again, there was serious fighting the whole of yesterday. That's when also these truck drivers were intercepted along the way and they were killed.
According to Chinene, only 1 truck driver escaped yesterday's ambush.
That one, lucky enough, he died, but he's in a serious condition in the hospital.
At least 13 passengers who were traveling in the taxis were rescued and placed under the care of South Sudan's government. Wilton Sanya is the mayor of Uganda's Koboko municipality.
So I went across to South Sudan. I had a meeting with the people across there. What they told me, what I heard and what they told me is that these people entered an ambush of rebels, ambush of armed people. So I really do not know who these rebels are, but all I know as mayor is that they entered an ambush 65 kilometers from Yei to Juba. And those people only, they were killing the driver. The passengers were stripped naked and allowed to go unhurt.
Sanya has appealed for calm and says they are coordinating with their South Sudan counterparts in Yei to rescue those who were abducted and also give formal communication on the incident.
What is happening now is really something which all of us, the Ugandan, and are really all perturbed. We are all shocked. We are, I think, going to have a security meeting so that we can have a formal, you know, position about the whole.
Chinene says the drivers want security beefed up along major routes used by traders to South Sudan.
This thing has taken place for many years. People are killed every day. And we don't know why they are targeting mostly Ugandans. We don't know. And we don't know the solution, because for us, we are proposing that maybe the Uganda army can go back to South Sudan for patrols, because we are going there to do business. It is not a luxury. Sudan is just like a home.
The Koboko mayor says some of the bodies are being sent for burial in Uganda, but others are still in the bush as serious fighting continues. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A U.S.-based economist says Sudan will now be able to close its budget deficit and access billions of dollars in grants from international financial institutions. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund announced last week that Sudan is now considered eligible for debt relief under IMF's Staff Monitored Program for heavily indebted countries. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank announced on Friday that their preliminary analysis of Sudan's Staff Monitored Program, a program that was announced in October 2020 to reform Sudan's economy, shows that Sudan could be eligible for debt relief under the Enhanced Heavily Indebted Poor Countries, or HIPC. Carol Baker is the Chief of Mission for Sudan at the IMF.
Sudan can move forward toward the HPIC decision point, which is the first formal step in the HPIC process. It also means that Sudan's on this path to integrating with the international financial community, and that'll unlock financing and poverty reduction. I think we all know Sudan's debt is very large, and it was mostly contracted decades ago, and most of it is in arrears. So resolving these old debts is critical to unlocking development financing and for Sudan to be able to reduce its high poverty.
The staff monitored program has seen Sudan lift subsidies on fuel and unify the exchange rates of the Sudanese pound to the US dollar, among other reforms. Sudan's external debt is estimated between $55 and $60 billion. In January, the U.S. government provided Sudan with a $1 billion U.S. dollar loan to clear its arrears with the World Bank. Baker announced on Friday that the process is now complete.
So a big day for Sudan. Very exciting news coming out of the World Bank today that the arrears to the World Bank have been cleared. They've made a very first step of re-engaging with the international community. And the bank and the fund's boards have really given them the green light to work toward HPIC, the debt relief. This large debt that we're talking about could be reduced under the HPIC process significantly. Our initial estimate indicate that Sudan's debt could potentially be reduced from an estimated $50 billion to around $8 billion. And this would resolve and restore debt sustainability.
Baker says for Sudan to reach what she calls a decision point in this process, which is expected to happen by end of June, more economic reforms must be carried out. She says Sudan must strengthen its central bank independence, set up an anti-corruption commission, follow a budget reporting program, and improve overall economic transparency, among other things. Sudanese economist Bakri Al-Madani says Friday's development could help Sudan in the short term to deal with some of its economic problems.
The idea of taking advantage of the assistance to pay off the interest that Sudan has not paid to the World Bank by using the U.S. United States help is a good step to get Sudan's back to benefit from some of the really good programs from the World Bank. That would open an immediate help from the World Bank of $250 million to help in dealing with the budget deficit. There is about $2 billion project and program that should be coming in the coming 2 years. This is the good news. All of that good.
Al-Madani says in order to benefit from potential assistance from the World Bank and other entities, it is critical that Sudan's government have a plan to improve and grow the economy in a way that benefits all Sudanese.
The question should be, it's not about the IMF and World Bank loans, it's about if the country is ready to use those loans in a way that is constructive and productive. That is the missing formula.
Al-Madani says once Sudan has carried out all the necessary reforms and has satisfied the program's requirements, it will reach what the IMF calls a completion point and have its debt removed from the books. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, some political parties in Sudan have expressed mixed reactions over the recent declaration of principles signed between the transitional government and the SPLM North faction led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu. Some parties describe the move as a good step towards ending the long conflict in the country. Other politicians say the SPLM North and the government have no legitimate mandate to decide on behalf of the Sudanese. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudan's transitional government and the SPLM North faction led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu signed a declaration of principles Sunday in Juba, which includes a secular state, a unified army, and a federal system of governance. In response, the Sudanese Communist Party issued a statement praising the government and Al-Hilu for reaching an agreement on a secular state. Party spokesperson Fathi Al-Fadil calls the document a first step in a long march towards a just comprehensive peace in Sudan, but says the parties must show their commitment to fully implementing the agreement. The Sudanese Congress Party also welcomed the move, calling it a great political breakthrough in a peace process in Sudan. The Umma National Party, a reform wing led by Mubarak al-Fadil, describes the signing as a step in the right direction to end the war in Sudan. The party said the declaration of principles inspired the spirit of what was agreed upon at Asmara Conference. But not all parties embraced the agreement. Abubakar Abdul Razik, a member of the political bureau of the Popular Congress Party, says neither Al-Hilu nor Sudan's head of state, General Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, have the right to force a secular state on the Sudanese people.
If Al-Hilu wants to force a secular state on the Sudanese people, our people are ready as well to defend Islam through force and are even capable of taking up arms to defend the Sharia law. If we want to respect the will of the people, we should present the matter in an open referendum so that our people can decide. If they choose a secular state or they choose Sharia law, we will respect the opinion of the Sudanese people.
Abdul Razik says, after realizing the thirst of Sudanese for freedom of religion and other freedoms, it would be better to reform the laws of the country, which open more freedoms, including for Muslims.
We want to implement a Sharia that doesn't criminalize apostasy but makes space for freedom and permissibility. A Sharia that doesn't monitor houses if people commit adultery or drink alcohol. This is their privacy that authorities should not interfere with.
Haj Hamad, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says the declaration paves the way towards realizing total peace in the country. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, Hamad says the document ends the faulty ideology created by Sudan military leaders in the government since the country gained its independence. He says Sudanese revolutionaries still want to see many more reforms.
It is a very good movement that it gives the impression that now both the military and the civilians are moving towards the right direction of implementing the basic slogans of peace, justice, and rule of law that was being initiated by the December Revolution.
The two parties are expected to resume peace talks in the third week of April. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, some community leaders in Eastern Equatoria State are encouraging refugees to return home. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
I got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A 22-year woman sitting for the 2021 South Sudan Certificate of Secondary School Education examinations gave birth a few minutes before she went into an examination hall this week. An education official in Kapoita Central County says South Sudan's education policy gives special consideration to girls and women who get pregnant while in school and allows them an extra 30 minutes to finish their exams. For VOA News, Vialo Elias reports from Juba.
Jessica Natiam says she experienced intense labor pain when she woke up to prepare for her first examination day. She says security personnel and some school teachers arrived at the hospital carrying her English examination paper, so she immediately wrote her first exams while in the hospital.
I delivered sessions, but before I even got discouraged, I thought maybe I was going to miss my examination. But likely enough, when I delivered, when I came out, I met with the investigators coming for a examination. They brought my examination. Then I did my examination in the hospital. Then I was already delivered.
Natiam says she was determined to continue with her studies after she became pregnant. She says she did not encounter many challenges after she safely delivered, but had to write another exams from home because her school is far away.
Yes, from home. I was with one, the national monitor from Juba, and the head teacher, and some of the security. Wrote the paper, they opened, then they went. Then they left me with one and then they left us to give them the security.
Ayoma Sarafind, the acting director of education in Kapoita County, says the National General Education Ministry issued a circular to all schools stating that girls who become pregnant be allowed to sit for the South Sudan Certificate of Secondary Education Examination. Sarafin says education officials informed him when Natiam was taken to Kapoita Civil Hospital to deliver her baby. He says the State Ministry of Education and the secondary school in Kapoita agreed that Natiam be allowed to write her exams from the hospital minutes after safely delivering her baby.
It's not only during this period of coronavirus. Of course, there has been a letter that is indicating that from the Ministry of General Education, all our girls who had that situation, not only here in Kapoita, but across the nation, should be given the chance to sit the examinations.
Sarafin urges young women and girls to seek advice on sexual education. He encourages girls to stay focused while they are in school.
This is a biological challenge, which is sometimes if you don't take control over it, you go, in fact, you may also come out, drop out of the school. But my encouragement to the girls is that please let them aim higher. Of course, education of South Sudan, as we are all South Sudanese, depends on, of course, when you educate these young girls, you're educating the whole nation.
Sarafin appeals to young school girls to take care of themselves to ensure that they succeed in becoming great women in South Sudan society. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The World Health Organization reports the African continent is lagging in the race to vaccinate its people against the deadly coronavirus. WHO says Africa needs far greater access to COVID-19 vaccines to reach its goal of vaccinating 60% of the population by June 2022. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Africa received its first delivery of vaccines from the COVAX vaccine-sharing facility a month ago. Health officials say this has kick-started robust vaccination campaigns throughout much of the continent. Richard Mahigo is an immunization and vaccine development program coordinator at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. He says 32 countries currently are vaccinating high-risk groups against COVID-19. So far, he notes, nearly 7.7 million doses have been administered.
This is indeed a good start, even if the continent has received only limited doses and much later than other regions of the world. The momentum just have started must be kept up to widen the scope of COVID-19 vaccination beyond the high-risk group that have been prioritized by many countries.
Mihigo warns this will not be possible unless vaccine equity becomes a reality. He says it is unfair for some high-income countries to vaccinate their entire populations while ignoring the needs of poorer nations. WHO estimates Africa will need nearly 1.5 billion vaccine doses to protect 60% of the continent's 1.2 billion population by June 2022. Another challenge facing Africa is the new coronavirus mutant strains. Mihigo says at least 15 African countries have reported the presence of variant strains. He says it is important to monitor the evolution of the new strains and to maintain public health measures such as masks and social distancing.
All the measures that were proven really effective in preventing the transmission should continue to be done. By increasing the vaccination capacity, we will put less pressure on the virus and avoid its mutation, as we have heard. So this is the only solution that we can have to get out of this situation.
Mihigo says WHO is exploring different ways of boosting the vaccine supply through the COVAX facility. One possible solution, he says, is to collaborate with rich countries and test their willingness to share surplus doses with Africa. Another is to promote technology transfer and reduce intellectual property barriers so vaccines can be produced locally. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A group of young men and women from the Pajok community of Magui County in Juba, Torit, and Pajok organized a cultural gala last week to encourage refugees who fled the area in 2017 to return to their villages. The deputy chairperson of the Pajok community says Pajok village has remained a ghost town for too long, and it's time for refugees to return home to develop the area. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
More than 100 people attended the Agola Kapuk Cultural Gala in Pajok Payam under the theme Winya, which in the Acholi language means listen to me. The gala is said to represent local voices for unity, protection, prosperity and development. Oweri John Charles, deputy chairperson of the Pajok community, says local leaders have recorded more than 7,000 refugees who have returned home since 2017. Charles says the group organized the gala to educate South Sudanese who have been living outside the country that Pajok is now safe.
We want those who are in the refugee camps to know that people are at home, and our aim is for them to start returning home like the rest, so that the coming 2022, we have the program when people are many and we show our culture and develop our hometown together.
Oluksebit Laboke, a member of the group from Torit, says most of the people living in Pajok Payam are former refugees who returned from settlement camps outside the country because of frustrations. He says the gala is to make them feel at home and refresh their memories of a peaceful town.
Many of these people do not have hope, and we think that when we put this cultural gala day, this cultural gala day will give hope on them, because in 2017, when our people were running from here, we were having cultural gala every time and again. As I talk, we know that our culture is the only thing that will help us to have that hope in our home. We were not planning to run.
Oringa Lapson, a returnee from Uganda, says he fled to Uganda 4 years ago during the war and returned to Pajok in 2019 when he could not feed his family.
Sometimes the food they are giving us will not reach up to the date of another distribution. That is why I decided to come back, because there is a lot of problem we are facing. Even the firewood, the host community, they have given us the land for settlement. They cannot allow us to go beyond the required distance they have given to us. So that all the tree has been paying that no cutting down of the tree.
Ola Joseph Okuna, a teacher, says he fled Pajok in 2017 and settled in Palabek refugee camp in northern Uganda. He says he first returned in 2018, but was humiliated by members of the community because they would always sing songs to him, castigating him for fleeing the country. Okuna says he returned to the camp but came home again in 2019 because he could no longer endure the challenges in the refugee camp.
When you are not Ugandan, you cannot even teach. For example, I'm a teacher. Now from Uganda, they also remove all Sudanese sisters. We were 128. Out of 128, they selected only 8 teachers.
Betty Achan, another returnee, says she fled the same war in 2017 and returned in 2019 with all her children. She says the plots of land that were distributed to them were all rocky areas where someone cannot grow crops to support herself. Achan says the refugees are always forced to rent pieces of land to cultivate vegetables to complement the litter that they get from UNHCR.
Where I farm is very small. You go to hire a piece of land, they tell you to give 6,000 or 20,000 shillings. You dig in that place, the food may yield only one basin, and you grow something like simsim so as to change diet because having cooking oil always is not good. But when you dig there, in the next year, the owner will tell you to go farm somewhere else. He wants to farm in that same land. So I sow, I decided to just return because that lifestyle cannot help me.
According to community leaders, more than 20,000 people fled Pajok Payam in April 2017 when government forces attacked the town with claims that SPLA-IO forces had a base in the area and were engaging the community people and that most youths had joined the opposition. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now take you into the Acholi land for some traditional song. This one is entitled Labena and it goes out to our listeners in Palabek. We've been listening to some traditional Acholi song. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect you and others from contracting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.